You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Animal Party is brought to you by PetCare Rx, America's most affordable pet pharmacy. PetCare Rx offers the same meds as top vets, but with a savings up to 50%. So, go to PetCareRx.com. Use promo code ANIMAL10, A-N-I-M-A-L, the number 10, and receive $10 off orders of $50 or more.
Hello, this is Animal Party, and you must be tardy for this party. You must be late because I didn't see you coming in with the VIPs. Our VIP today is Adrian Nelson, and he's already here. He's already helping himself to some treats because he's been good enough to join me so early in the morning, our time, on the radio, and talk to us about the fur bears. But before we get to him, I want to ask you a little trivia question just to warm you all up today. Okay, now you might know that Christmas is the day where most people send cards. And the second most common day of sending cards is Valentine's Day. Yeah, and you heard me talking at Christmas about how many people send presents to their pets. Well, how many people, what percent of North Americans do you think give their pets Valentine's presents? Oh, or cards or something. Hopefully not chocolate, everybody. Chocolate is not good for dogs, and artificial sweeteners not good for dogs or cats. So make sure if you are giving Valentine treats that they really are pet treats, not things you want yourself, and maybe they're off the list on your diet, so you're giving them to your dog or cat, so you still get to handle them and buy them and unwrap them. No, no, no. You've got to give them treats that are actually right for them, and that could be something as simple as the skin off your salmon, skin off your chicken, a little bit of the fish oil, a little bit of butter on your finger for a cat. And for a dog, it can be as simple as a little bit of maybe you like light meat and there's some dark meat you don't want, give it to him. Especially if it's not all spiced and cooked and it's just a little bit cooked plain. That's it. Give it to him. Set aside a little bit of your stew before you add in the coriander and the curry and make it zing. And give it to your dog. A little bit of zucchini, a little bit of yam. That won't hurt your dog. He'll love it. Okay, so today we have a show about the fur bear defenders. And these are people who are working to try and protect all the animals with fur from being slaughtered for their fur. And it used to be this was kind of the minks and the otters and the beavers and the beautiful wild animals and some even that we consider pests like coyotes and beavers. But now it's actually gone further than that. There's a disturbing thing going on that has to do with cats and dogs. So I'll be talking later in the show about some lighter topics, but for now, I want to go right to my guests, and I want to get to the meat of this topic and take the fur off here and talk to Adrian Nelson from the Fur Bear Defenders about what's going on with our furry animals and what humans are doing to them right now and what your group's about. So welcome to the show, Adrian. It's Pet Life Radio Animal Party. Welcome to the party.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, so what's your group doing?
We do a variety of issues, some of which you touched on. We do a lot of trapping, anti-trapping work, and like you said, for, you know, lynx and otters and, you know, all of the fur-bearing animals that are used in the commercial fur industry. And one of our more recent campaigns is, again, related to the fur industry, but as you said, it's a little disturbing. We're talking about cats and dogs that are being used for their fur in coats and garments and things like that.
Okay, so right away when you say that, I think there's no way I would ever buy that. Ever, ever, ever. And then I think, but what if I did and I didn't know it? Is that possible?
It is. It's quite possible.
How can that be possible? If I never buy anything labeled dog fur, cat fur, and I'm really careful to only buy artificial fur, because I don't personally want to wear bunny or duck or anything like that. So artificial only for me, how come that's not protecting me from making this mistake?
Here in Canada, we don't actually have any labeling laws for fur. Fur falls through a loophole in the Labeling and Textile Act. So everything on a garment other than the fur has to be labeled. So consumers often are tricked into thinking that what they're buying is fake fur, because they're generally concerned. They're taking a look at the tag. It's reading, you know, cotton or polyester or something like that, and they assume that it's the entire garment, when in fact the fur on it doesn't have to be labeled. Then, to make matters worse, we're finding companies are obviously mislabeling fur. So we're finding real fur labeled as fake fur, or we're finding made-up names for fur, you know, things like Asiatic wolf, which doesn't exist. These are animals.
There's no such thing. Yeah, that's a dog, right? That's a dog who's got the bad luck of being born at the wrong place at the wrong time in Asia.
Yeah, very much could be, yeah.
So, okay, so I shouldn't be buying anything that has any kind of fake fur or real fur or anything fur-like at all anymore, is what you're saying. Is that right? In America,
yeah.
Too? Or is it okay in America? Is it safe to buy this stuff in the United States?
In the United States, they've gone ahead and have actually banned dog and cat from coming in. I know the Humane Society in the U.S. is still doing investigations down there, and they're still finding furs that are mislabeled. So they don't know even down there what they're buying. There's a little bit more consumer protection with the ban in place than there is here in Canada. But when things are mislabeled wrong, it's pretty hard to make an accurate decision on things.
Well, Adrian, we're going to come back after the break. We have to go to break and listen to our sponsors and hear about some of the great products you can get for your pets. And then we'll be back to Animal Party. And I'm going to ask you more about this because I want to know, where are these dogs and cats coming from? And I also want to know about the beavers. And since it's the year of the rabbit, I want to know about the rabbits. So we'll be talking about that when we come back. Everybody stay tuned to the party, Animal Party.
Because the best is yet to come. Stick around.
At Petco, we really love pets. There isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
"So how do you feel about cat condos?"
we can say from experience,
"Feels like home for her."
Enter the code PARTY10, PARTY, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
There's a movement afoot, ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code ANIMAL, ANIMAL, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
How would you like your business to reach out and invite in our audience?
We have a brand new trademark concept called InfoSeeds.
InfoSeeds are short 20-second seeds of information about your place of business, practice, or service.
We only have a limited number of slots left. For more information, visit PetLifeRadio.com. Click on sponsorship information.
There you can listen to a sample of InfoSeed or email us at
PetLifeRadio.com.
Remember, only a limited number of opportunities are available.
Hi, this is Tim Link, host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Join me as we feature interviews with best-selling pet-related authors, award-winning writers, journalists, and bloggers. And we'll tell stories about the animals and interesting topics about the animals in our lives. Each of the interviews will give you a first-hand knowledge about why the authors and writers chose a particular story, what the feature animals meant to them, and what has become of those animals that we've talked about. And of course, I'll also share stories from my own books, blogs, articles, and experiences. So be sure to join me and the writers and authors on Animal Rights.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
You're inside the VIP room.
With the hottest party in town.
Back to the party.
Let's go!
Hello! Welcome back to the Animal Party. We're here with Adrian Nelson from the Fur Bearer Defenders. He's basically defending everything with fur, so people out there don't kill it and take its fur and sell the fur. And that's what his group is all about. But the disturbing thing we've just been talking about is that it's not just wild animals anymore. That's disturbing enough. Dogs and cats are somehow being caught and up in this. And I want to ask you, yeah, how is this happening? Are they being imported from somewhere? And if so, why is Canada particularly not screening this? And it sounds like the U.S., you're saying, made a law against it. It might not be effective. But why is Canada still open to this? And where's this coming from? Where are these poor dogs and cats coming from, Adrian?
Well, as a little bit of a background, what ended up happening is the Humane Society did a two-year undercover operation in China, Thailand, and the Philippines. And that's where they uncovered this disturbing trade. And they found about 2 million dogs and cats were being killed just solely for their fur there and being exported out of the country, used in the country, and sent all over. The European Union has banned it. Australia's banned it. The United States has banned it. Canada refuses to ban it. And the major reason behind that is that any ban on furs coming into Canada would jeopardize a ban on our seal products leaving Canada, which is something the government obviously wants to try to avoid.
Oh, boy, this is sounding warped. If you went out into any crowd, really, even in the north, mm-hmm. even in a native crowd, if you went out to any crowd anywhere in the country and about these two issues, everybody, the majority of Canadians would say no. No, we don't want cats and dogs as fur. And no, we don't want baby seals killed for their fur. And no, we don't agree with these things. Okay, so since we're sort of getting there, you brought me there with the native card. I haven't met many native people who defend this kind of stuff. I've met white people who, you know, who are hunters and trappers, who and fishermen particularly, who mention native rights as to legitimate their own right to take. I want to know, is this part of the equation for you? Because I would hope that somehow native cultures and peoples who rely on these things, hunting and trapping and using animals for food and ceremony and clothing, that they would still be allowed to do it. And I'm wondering what your group feels about that. And if this is just, seems to me it's a really small percentage. Is it a huge percentage, small percentage? What are the facts on this, Adrian? Where do the natives play into this?
Well, that's true. You know, obviously this is a native custom that's been around for many years. They've always, you know, used animals and animal products. But they generally have a different view on how to use animal products. They weren't a commercial thing for them where it was just the fur alone. They were using the entire part of the animal. What we're really talking about is a commercial fur trade. We're talking about an industry that's killing millions of animals every year just for their fur, and that's basically all that's being used. And they'll quite often cite, you know, natives, and it supports native cultures and native communities, and it supports communities up north where they have nothing else to do. This is really a false. It is about a little over 2% of Canada's native population are actually employed by the fur trade. So we're talking a very small amount. And the amount of, and the natives that I speak with tell me that they're really upset with how animals are dealt with. You know, they
yeah, and being used like this. I've had this too. I've had them call into my live shows and say, you know, I can't stand it that our holy practices are being used as an excuse for slaughter. You know, and I get it. I get where they're coming from on this. So, and you've had the same kind of feedback?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. We find the exact same thing, but both with natives and with northern communities, too. We find that a very small percentage of the furs that are being trapped are coming from our northern communities. Most of them are from the southern areas. We have trapping communities in very major cities. And, you know, just outside the city limits, they're trapping.
It's been quite an education for me since I first started talking to you a few weeks back, because initially I really thought we were going to be talking about, and we will get to this, we'll get to this before the end of the show, but I really thought we were going to be talking about why a leg hold trap isn't a good way to kill an animal, and why leaving animals caught in traps to die is inhumane, and why it's really unfair to take coyotes or beavers or bears or something that's bugging people and think you should kill them. I really thought that was going to be our whole whole hour, and you just blew me away with this whole dog and cat and underground markets and seals and politics, international politics, the borders open to dog and cat to be basically snuck in under our noses and unlabeled and sold to us without us knowing, just so we could keep that border open for seal, which, I mean... It just makes no sense. What do you think can be done about this to tear this down? And but is it just awareness? Maybe we've got to point people in the direction of your website and get them to see that video. Because the video you were just talking about where the investigator, the ex-policeman from the United States went to China, the Philippines, and got that footage. You've got that footage. Can you explain to people what it is, who did it, and what they can see? Because maybe what we need is more eyes, more ears, more mouths, more emails. Is that what we need?
Yes, indeed, indeed. And it really is an awareness of people understanding where their fur comes from. So we do have that undercover footage from the Humane Society, from the dog and cat fur trade. It is on our website, which is just furbearerdefenders.com. We also have videos up there on the trapping cruelty and showing actually how animals suffer in these traps. So rather than taking the information secondhand, you know, people can really go on there and judge for themselves whether or not this is cruel. And I think we really do need to get awareness back out there, because the fur industry has gotten kind of sneaky in the last few years. Most of us, when we think of fur, we think of these long mink coats or fox jackets, things like that, you know, that are quite expensive.
And most of us would never intentionally buy something like that,
exactly.
If secretly we wanted to, because we know it would draw a lot of heat. I just saw a Twitter the other day, someone Twittered me. I don't know why they think that me, Deb Wolf, animal expert, would want to get Twitters from them. You know, I'm Animal Deb on Twitter, and I'm clearly pro-animals. But she sent me this Twitter about how she found herself in a pet store, and there was a PETA rally going on, and there she was, ha ha ha, in her fur coat. How embarrassing.
Right.
Just thinking, like, lady, get me off your Twitter. How do I unfollow this one? You know? No, some people. But yeah. So people are still intentionally buying these things, and some are flaunting
it.
Most are avoiding it, right? Most are avoiding
it. No, and that's the scary part about it is when you look around, especially in the winter months here, how many people are wearing a fur coat? And we're not talking about full-length fur coats now, but when you look at the little trim on a hood of a jacket or a little bit of fur around a purse or on a pair of boots, that fur comes from a living, breathing animal. And we don't think of that as fur anymore. It's just a piece of trim to us. And I think that that's really where our awareness needs to come back from.
You know, I've had things come into my house, one little area rug, 3 by 2 feet kind of thing, that someone gave me because they thought it was funny because it looked like one of my cats. It had the exact same pattern. And they gave it to me as a gift. And it came into the house. And, first of all, don't ever do that, guys. If you have a pet, don't get carpets that match the pet because the pet will get stepped on. Okay, it's not a good thing, really. You want them to stand out. Okay, but anyway, so they got me this rug as a joke, I guess. And within days of it being here, it got completely eaten and devoured by the animals here, which is really unusual behavior from my animals. I have a lot of animals. I have 6 dogs, 2 of which are adolescents, one of which is young. And then I also have, 7 cats, entering my foster rescue stream, some leaving, some staying. So various players, but I've never had a carpet eaten before, ever. It was just eaten. It turned into nothing. And I wondered after the fact, maybe that was made of cat or dog. Maybe that was real because they would think it's beef jerky. They would think it's, you know, it's food, right? It's a dried food item. They wouldn't see it as a carpet. And, so inadvertently, I guess I did have something like that in my house. Okay. So, we do have to go to another commercial. I want to tell y'all, it's only 3% of people who give their dogs and cats Valentines. Well, that's kind of sad. That's kind of sad when we found out that for the New Year's kiss, most of you out there, overwhelming majority, would rather kiss your own pet than either Brad or Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie. You'd rather kiss your own pet. So why aren't you getting them a Valentine's present? A nice dog or cat treat or a new toy, maybe. All right, so we'll be back in a minute with Adrian Nelson. We've got to go to another break, but it won't be long, and then we'll be full steam ahead for the rest of the show. Hang in there, everybody, and come back to the party. It's Animal Party on Pet Life Radio.
Don't leave this party before it's over, because the best is yet to come. Only losers leave the party early anyway. Party on. Back in a few.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/party, P-A-R-T-Y, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more.
Celebrate your special occasion and give her this classic semi-eternity band created with 1-carat brilliant diamonds, channel set in 14-carat white gold. Exclusively yours from ICE.com. Free shipping over $150, free returns, and 30-day money-back guarantee.
Go to ICE.com and use promo code ACTFP and get 20% off your purchase. Or use promo code ADTFP and get 20% off at Diamond.com. ICE.com or Diamond.com. Get 20% off from Pet Life Radio.
Aquariums and pond keeping are among the most popular of all hobbies in the United States and throughout the world. In fact, fish are probably the most numerous pet in people's homes and in their businesses. In Aquarium Mania, we'll learn more about the secret and not-so-secret life of fish and other inhabitants, the basics of good aquarium keeping, the complexities of the aquarium industry, and the science and art that surround this fascinating hobby. I'm your host, Roy Anong, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. Aquarium Mania.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
You're inside the VIP room
with the hottest party in town.
Back to the party.
Let's go.
Hello. Welcome back to the Animal Party on Pet Life Radio. And we're here with Adrian Nelson, and we're going to talk more about the fur bearers. So I'm just going to ask you, Adrian, let's talk more about those traps. You know, one thing that bugs me is when I see the municipality here with the banners out on the highways and a legitimate-looking person, legitimately marked, obviously going to kill beavers. It makes me sick. There's got to be another way. Sometimes I read in the paper that places like Scotland are actually importing beavers because they killed off theirs and they need them. And so they're actually importing them from Canada. Why can't we send them these beavers? What is going on with this? Why do we think it's okay to kill stuff that bugs us when we move into their neighborhood? And how can we change that?
Yeah, this is another common problem we face all the time with the so-called nuisance wildlife. And it's often coyotes and beavers and it's really, we've encroached on their habitat, and we don't like them there anymore. Beavers especially get a bad rap because supposedly they cause flooding and, you know, can wreck roads and all of this other stuff. There's a lot of devices that are out there that actually will mitigate the flooding and allow beavers to stay in an area and have no risk for property damage. There's things called pond levelers and beaver deceivers that are very simple to install. And when municipalities put these in, it actually saves them money putting in these water flow devices than it does to have somebody go out and constantly unplugging ditches and taking dams down and paying trappers to trap and remove these animals.
Well, okay, tell me what a beaver deceiver is, because I love it. It sounds so cool. What's a beaver deceiver? Imagine that on your business card, right? You know, Deborah Wolf.
Indeed.
Okay, so
there's a fellow back east by the name of Skip Lyle who came up with these devices, and there's a number of people that are working on them, and he's coined this term, beaver deceiver, as well as another clever one called the caster master. And these, the beaver deceiver is basically a fencing system. It's a trapezoidal fence that's put in front of culverts or in areas where beavers are generally damming. And because of the shape of it and the size of it, it doesn't allow the beaver to dam up the culvert. So the beaver can stay in the area, will not dam and cause any flooding, and doesn't have to be trapped and killed.
I once saw the beaver, that movie on IMAX full screen.
Yes.
It was so cool. They took you inside the hive and they showed you all these generations. They're so family oriented. I mean, once you see something like that, you really don't want them killed anymore. They have so many little loving and cuddling and sort of affectionate and grooming and parental, the relationships, you could just see them. You could see the sibling rivalry and things like this within this den. It's amazing. And the little teeny bit you see of the den sticking up is really just a tiny portion. They have a whole world under there, a big bungalow under there. It's amazing.
It's true. It's true, yeah. Yeah, and they are. Beavers are very family-oriented. You know, they mate for life. The beaver kits stay with family for a couple of years to learn and help build the dams before they move on. And beavers are a huge asset to us. And more people are starting to realize this, especially over in Europe. You know, they control flooding during, you know, times of heavy rain. They replenish our aquifers, allow more water to be released later in the year. They create, obviously, wetland habitats, areas for fish and birds and everything else. And places are starting to realize this. And like you said, there's areas now that are asking for beavers to come back in. Even close by, Oregon is starting to look at reintroducing beavers into certain areas in order to rebuild fish habitat and help with salmon stocks and everything else.
Well, hopefully when they do that, they'll give the beaver deceivers and the other equipment to the farmers and the ranchers, because otherwise they just set up a problem all over again. You know, I see this happening
exactly,
with wolf reintroduction. And now I'm going to ask you about the coyotes, because the beavers sound like an easier solution. A few years ago, they found, maybe it was last year, a lake they didn't even know existed in the middle of Alberta in the north that was like one of the biggest lakes in the world, and it's all pure water and everything, and they couldn't have ever known it was there, and they surmise it must have been created by beavers because they can't find a water source, you know. So they're amazing creatures. But what about coyotes, coyotes, mountain lions? There was a mountain lion around my neighborhood that killed 15 animals, never ate them, got into paddocks and barns, killed full-size horses and donkeys and things like this, and left again, was seen walking across the playground, the baseball diamond at the local elementary school more than once. Took some animals from a petting zoo that was backed on to that school. So there's some things going on where there really are particular animals that are behaving in a way that can't be tolerated where they are. I hope they could be moved. But what do we do about all this? There's a big hate on the coyote right now. And, you know, it's hard to convince people, the way it might be easy to convince people with the beaver, that it's, although there's the value to the beaver makes it tough to convince people, doesn't it? Because they want to catch it and kill it and use its pelt, don't they?
Whereas well, they do. There is value that way. And coyotes, you know, they thrive in an urban environment. They're one of the few animals that do very well here. But they do well by keeping our rodent populations down. You know, they keep rats and mice in check and everything else. But what ends up happening is they become used to people. And we invite them into our backyards, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly. You know, some people are feeding coyotes knowingly, and others are leaving, you know, dog food dishes out on the back porch, or they're having, you know, small animals, cats and dogs running around at night. And this,
if you don't clean up after your fruit trees, your garbage, your compost, putting pet food outside, all this kind of stuff, chickens that aren't secured, even those petting zoo animals next to the elementary, that was a draw. That's why the lion's there. So,
yeah,
but exactly, what do you do? I would suggest the petting zoo should have some good yappy dogs. Then the lion won't want to go there. Because nature fights nature best of all.
Indeed. Yeah. Mother Nature always looks after herself, for sure. She'll find a balance for it. But we need to take a look at the practices that we're doing and see if we're inviting wildlife into our backyard. And then when we see these coyotes and mountain lions and stuff, we need to make them realize that this isn't a place we want them. And that's simply done by hazing. You know, if you make yourself very loud, very big, you're threatening towards the animal, banging a stick or something like that, the animals are generally scared of humans. And if we keep that perception there, they're not going to want to come into our neighborhoods and into our backyards. But when we don't...
So something you could do is if there's a garbage can nearby, grab a stick and go bang, 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 bang as loud as you can. Honk your horn. Drive right up in its face. Bang, 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 bang. You want this animal to think people are not cool. Don't want to hang around
them.
Exactly. Because somebody else might have taught it that, oh, if you look cute, you might get a sandwich. Oh, we might leave you our apple core. Come right after we leave and you can have the garbage we left behind from our picnic. You know, this is the kind of stuff you're fighting against. So you want them to think, ew, humans are noisy. Humans are scary. Humans are big. I'm out of here. Hang on to your kids, though. Keep them real close because these animals, they can take children. So can mountain lions very easily. So can bears. So keep your children close, especially when you're doing things like berry picking, picking wildflowers, all these wonderful things we do in the woods that I want you to keep doing. You know, in November, December, people were collecting holly and putting it around their homes and great stuff. Have a big noisy dog with you on leash and your kids close by. And you won't have problems
Indeed.
With the wildlife. But you let that dog run around free, he might be too far to protect you, or he might chase them toward you. So there's ways to do this smart.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and that's what it takes, is just having the animals know that humans are not a place for food.
Okay. So with the coyote, do you get a lot of trouble? Like when you go out, I could just imagine you at, you know, malls and fairs and things with your plaques and your brochure and a group of really big old hunters with rifles in their pickup trucks standing there with their arms crossed in front of you. This is what I'm picturing, some poachers, or not poachers, some trappers and some hunters, you know, with licenses and all that, but pretty bent on shutting you down. Does that happen to you?
Yeah, obviously there is some opposition to what we're doing. Some people take it as threatening a lifestyle or something like that, and we're not advocating for, you know, hunters that hunt, you know, for sustenance or anything like that. We're really focusing on a commercial fur trade here. We're focusing on a business that really isn't supporting anybody full time. Most trappers do this as a hobby or on the side. They make very little money at it. And we're not talking about taking away somebody's livelihood. This is supplemental income for most people. So what we're really targeting here is a commercial industry that's making its money by killing animals.
What about rabbits? I mean, here we are in the year of the rabbit. People born 1915, 1927, 1939, 1951, 1963, 1975, 1987, 1999, and now 2011. You all should be, this is your totem, the rabbit. So, you know, you're supposed to be articulate, talented, ambitious, virtuous, reserved, have excellent taste. Rabbit people are admired, trusted, and often financially lucky. They are fond of gossip but are tactful and generally kind. They seldom lose their temper. They are clever at business and being conscientious. They never back out of a contract. They would make good gamblers because they have timing, gift of timing, but they seldom gamble. They're conservative, and they're most compatible with those born in the years of sheep, pig, and dog. Okay, so it is the year of the rabbit, and that meant, unfortunately for the rabbits, a lot of people are eating rabbit. I have a couple of friends here who breed rabbits as pets, one with oversized heads, a very fancy type, and the other that's quite huge, and they go to shows, and their kids show them, and they love them and all this, and they've been turning down calls. Everybody seems to want to eat their rabbits. So how does this fit into your group? What about rabbits being killed and eaten, and the fur, is the fur coming from there? Is the fur a separate stream when we have rabbit fur? How does that work?
It depends on the slaughtering process. Sometimes the fur is left over from rabbit meat and is used that way. Quite often with fur farms especially, they're farming basically for the fur. You know, there is obviously some demand for rabbit meat, but not as much as the demand for rabbit fur. And so a lot of that is coming from an animal strictly for its fur.
You know, there's a lot of myths out there about rabbits. Like, the number one myth people have is that if they turn them out, if they get bored of their pet and they just let it go free, it'll be fine. That's really not true. there's one of two things going to happen. One, it's going to get killed and eaten. And two, it's going to reproduce like mad and create a huge problem like they have at the University of Victoria, and they have at the Victoria Hospital, and they have in the town of Kelowna. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of places in the world where the rabbits are just in a huge abundance. The rabbit dung is no joking matter when you're going in and out of a hospital. You know, the fact that it's on everybody's shoes and coming in and out, coming in and out. Now, recently, we had a huge salmon run here. Best salmon run in 100 years. And that drew a lot of eagles, more eagles than ever. They were just huge. It was amazing. I saw them almost every day. In fact, today's one of the first days I'm on radio that I haven't seen him today, my friend, that roosts near me and looks at me while I'm on the radio and gives me the evil eye. Probably he thinks this is his property. But the eagles have been, then they ran out of food when the salmon run was done. And I heard that there were many, many, many of them eating rabbits, pegging them off at the University of Victoria. Now, I'm sure that was an interesting sight for the students. Probably beautiful aerial display, but probably nasty. You know, that's just, it alters nature in such unseen and terrible ways when we release pets. How do we deal with that? You know, is that part of the equation with all this hunting and killing and people arguing it's okay to use the fur? And how does that fit into things, the pets released?
Yeah, this is becoming an increasing problem for a lot of communities. And it's really about proper pet ownership. You know, people get a pet rabbit for Easter or something like that, and they don't realize that, you know, owning a pet is a long-term commitment. And you have to provide for that animal. And quite often what ends up happening is these poor rabbits are just dumped in areas where there may or may not be other rabbits. The vast majority of them are unsterilized, and rabbits do what rabbits do. And soon, you know, two rabbits is 20 rabbits, and 20 rabbits is 200 rabbits. And before you know it, the community has a real problem and ends up either having to trap and kill or find other ways of dealing with these animals. There are some municipalities that are looking at, and some I believe that have already put legislation in place for pet stores to have all rabbits spayed and neutered, which I think is probably a good thing for any animal to stop, you know, populations from breeding out of control. There should, again, just be more awareness of what it takes to actually own an animal and the responsibility behind that.
All right, so we'll be back in a minute with Adrian Nelson. We've got to go to another break. Hang in there, everybody, and come back to the party. It's Animal Party on Pet Life Radio.
Don't go anywhere, because the best is yet to come. Stick around.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to fleurop.com and use the code LUCKIES20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com. Code word LUCKYS and the number 20.
How would you like your business to reach out and invite in our audience? We have a brand new trademark concept called InfoSeeds. InfoSeeds are short 20-second seeds of information about your place of business, practice, or service. It's the best, most cost-effective way to invite us in. We only have a limited number of slots left. For more information, visit the website
PetLifeRadio.com.
Click on sponsorship information. There you can listen to a sample of InfoSeed. Remember, only a limited number of opportunities are available.
Got questions about your hound's health? Need the facts on Fido's fitness or food? You want to unleash your pup's potential? Well, you've come to the right place with Win with Dogs. Here, we learn how easy it is to naturally improve the lives of our furry friends. So sit, stay, and get ready to win with dogs. With me, Raquel Wynn. Exercise, nutrition, interaction, and love make for one healthy, happy hound. Give yourself the gift of knowledge on demand every week right here at Pet Life Radio with me, Raquel Wynn, and Wynn with Dogs.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
You're inside the VIP room.
With the hottest party in town.
Back to the party.
Let's go.
Hello. You're back at Animal Party on Pet Life Radio with your host, Deborah Wolf. And today, I have Adrian Nelson from the Fur Bearer Defenders. He's defending the animals with fur from those who want to kill them and sell their fur for money. And sometimes, I almost don't want to tell you this, but I went out on a blind date once, and the guy I was fixed up with, Adrian, you wouldn't believe it. I get there, and it seems like it's a good go. I had met his grandparents. No, they were his parents. They were older, though. Met his parents because they had wanted to buy a dog and train a dog, and they had these beautiful thoroughbred horses, and they needed a dog who would protect the acreage, and I had placed this beautiful large Roddy Cross with them, and I stayed overnight in their basement because they lived very, very far out in order to do this with this guard dog and have him meet all the staff. And at some point in it, they said, "We'd like you to meet our son." And I thought, oh, okay, maybe. You know, they're such nice animal people. This could really work. And so I went out on a date with this guy, and he says, "Why don't we watch a movie?" And I think, okay. And we go down to watch a movie, and his entire basement is completely decorated with dead animals. They're all animals he's trapped. I'm not kidding you. On top of the giant TV screen that I'm supposed to watch a movie on is this, like, I don't know if it was a lynx or a bobcat. I spent most of the movie trying to figure it out. Draped all along it like a woman on a piano, you know, like all sexy, weird. And then this other thing that was really nasty looking, he said it was a badger and it was really one of the most difficult animals to catch and he was really proud of it. Well, it was sort of on its haunches as if it was attacking him, all stuffed like this beside the lamp. And there was just like maybe 11 of these stuffed things in the basement. And I had brought my dog because I'd been doing the training and I'd had my own guard dog, sheepdog, been I had two dogs with me who'd been working. And so I had dogs with me and they didn't know what to make of this room. The whole time it was like I could hear the animals talking to me, "Run, go away, find someone else, more fish in the sea." You know, like really, it was just so creepy, so creepy. And he was so proud. And he had told me he had a trap line. He was one of the few modern people. He taught at a university here, and he was one of the few modern people who did. And he told me all the different ways he made sure his trap line was kind and fair and the animals were never in pain. And he tried to demonstrate all of these things to me because, of course, we did not watch the movie. We ended up having this huge debate, and I left in a huff with my animals thinking, oh, gotta have a shower. But is he right? If a trapper really is skilled and educated and does it properly with the best techniques, is it humane? Is it kind? Is it okay?
No, definitely not. There's nothing humane about trapping. There's basically three types of traps that are used. There is the leg hold trap, and it's commonly thought that the leg hold trap has been banned, and it has not. These are steel jawed traps that snap shut on an animal's limb and hold
it. Kind of looks like a clamshell, right? It kind of looks like a clamshell, and it just kind of bang.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it snaps closed. And animals are left suffering in these traps for days at a time. They often chew off their own leg or wring off their leg in order to escape. They break their teeth on the traps trying to get it out, pull their limbs, break their legs, that kind of thing.
When you say ring off, that sounds like a term. You mean it happens so often that's the name for when an animal chews its own leg off is called ring off?
It is. It's a term that was coined by trappers that basically explains an animal twisting or chewing at its limb until it can break its leg and rip it part of its paw or leg off in order to escape. Yeah,
that's
and
terrible.
When the trapper comes back, all that's left in there is a paw.
Do these animals, I'm imagining any animal, even my own dog or cat, accidentally caught in something like this, dying over a course of a few days, would they die of hunger or thirst, or would animals kill them? Like, what would happen to them?
They're stuck out in the open. Obviously, they're susceptible to other predators coming and getting them. They're left without food or water. And trapping generally takes place over the winter months, so they're left out in the snow, out in the cold, unable to find shelter, and are left there until the trapper returns, at which point the trapper basically clubs them over the head or steps on their rib cage in order to kill them. Trappers don't want to shoot an animal because that would get it bloody, and they don't want to get blood on the pelt because that would degrade the pelt quality and the price that they would get for it. So that's the leg hole trap, which is a commonly used trap. The other trap is called a conibear trap. And the way that this works is it two jaws, again, that swing closed. It was invented by a fellow by the name of Frank Conibear, who was looking for a humane alternative to trapping. When he completed this trap, he described it as an utter failure. It was not any more humane. And the trap now is commonly referred to as a body gripping or a body holding trap. The idea was that it was supposed to come down on the back of the neck, breaking the animal's neck almost instantly and killing them right away. Obviously, depending on how fast an animal moves through it, in which direction it is, the size of the animal, this trap can slam shut anywhere from their nose to their tail, and generally hits them around the midsection and just slowly squeezes them until they're dead.
So there's really no humane way to trap. No. Do cats and dogs get stuck in these things sometimes?
Most definitely. We constantly hear of people's pets getting trapped in these. Sometimes an animal will get out of the yard or they'll be off hiking. And these traps can be set, you know, just off of a hiking trail. And they're often baited with, you know, pieces of meat or fruit or something like that to attract animals to them. And obviously our dogs and cats are attracted to that as well. And it's, you know, every year we have stories of people losing their animals to these traps or, you know, having their animals missing limbs now because of these traps. And who knows how many animals just disappear and are found by the trapper and just discarded.
Have you heard about the news? I know it's all over the news. The 100 sled dogs killed after the Olympics last year. Horrible situation. The guy who killed them went to, you know, the employment standards and is seeking to sue his employer for making him do it. The employer's saying they didn't instruct him to do it. It was all his doing. But no matter what, 100 sled dogs were killed in a really horrible, cruel manner. Is your organization getting contacted about that? Are you a part of that at all? Because, I mean, did the fur go anywhere? They are fur bearers, but I guess it's a different kind of a commercial problem.
Indeed. You know, these type of problems are going to exist any time that we're putting a value, you know, a financial value on animals, whether it be a value for their fur or, in this case, their value to be able to pull a sled. When we put that value ahead of an animal's life, we're going to be running into these problems. And I think that's exactly what happened here. These dogs were of no use to the owner, and it was simply easier for them to shoot and kill them than it was to deal with, again, owning an animal.
Well, it's going to be investigated. There are companies that are not operating this way. There is a veterinarian involved in the whole investigation. There's a court case, and they are going to get to the bottom of this, I hope. But I would give the heads up to anybody with anything big coming to town, like the Olympics or anything else, you know, if there's animals involved, watch how they're treated, watch how they're taken care of, watch what happens after, make sure there's legislation in place, because I think they can bear the brunt of these large events, because all of a sudden, there's a demand for them like never before. And so unscrupulous people, rather than turn away bookings like the good companies did, will just get more dogs. And then when the demand goes down, they'll just get rid of those dogs. And those dogs don't make great pets. They've been born and bred and trained to run and pull their whole lives. So they really need to go to a specific situation. Some of them were rescued, though. About 75 of them were rescued after the fact and went to other tourist attractions that operate more ethically and were approved for the transfer. So we can't necessarily paint them all with the same brush, but I do think that whenever commerce and animals come together, the rules have to be airtight and carefully monitored. And there's other things with the Olympics too. I loved the Olympics. I had a wonderful time, but I don't like to turn on the news every day and find out that, you know, workers who did the lighting weren't paid, and this one wasn't paid, and that one wasn't treated right. And I think you've really got to police it, because it isn't when something big happens, it's a big opportunity for nasty people. So when animals who are the most vulnerable are involved, we've all got to make sure that they're treated right afterward. And I'm glad your organization's out there helping people get to the bottom of this. You know, I saw something in the news you'd probably be interested in, Adrian. Did you read about the fox? The discovery with the man and the fox in the grave? Did you read about that?
No, no.
Oh, well, they found, okay, it's even older than we thought. We thought man and dog had had this bond for a long, long time, but it's even older. They just found a community that's probably 14,500 years old in the area of Israel, Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. It was a big, well-traveled tribe. The Natufian culture is what they're called, and they buried their people with dogs, but the dogs were actually foxes. And there was one woman buried with her hand on a puppy, and then when the tribe had to evacuate that area, they removed the humans from the graves, and none of the other bones were taken from the graves except the dogs. So it indicates a special closeness. But I think that special closeness warrants a little kinder attitude toward us nowadays, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. It's great to see. You know, we've always had a special affection, I think, with animals. And I think that that's gone on ever since we've been in existence, probably.
But nowadays, with our methods of farming and clothing making, we really don't need their fur anymore, do we?
No, no. This is a luxury item, really. There's far better materials out there that are natural, that have just as much warming properties. We look and are less impactful on the environment. Not only is taking millions of animals out of the environment hurting us, but chemicals used to process fur. We're talking about, you know, an animal hide and fur that has to be stopped from rotting and decaying and everything else. And the chemical process involved in that can be quite toxic.
Well, I know that in the olden days, it used to be done with salts and the sun and time and huge amounts of labor. And I'm imagining that's the way the natives still do it, but it's probably not the way it's done in the stores that are producing the liners for our boots and our jackets and the trim on our children's coats. I mean, when you think of that trim right up against their little faces, it's a terrible idea to think of all those chemicals on top of dog and cat fur to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, there's common things like formaldehydes and chromium, bleaching agents, chemical dyes that are used. And we look at the way, and obviously done this way, I'm sure a lot of people out there are familiar with Alice in Wonderland. And in there, there's the character of the Mad Hatter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know how the Hatter became mad?
No.
How? It was practice to make beaver pelts into felt for the felt hat. They were made in a mixture of mercury, and the hatters would be there with their hands mixing up this beaver pelt with the mercury. And so it was quite common after years and years of becoming a hatter to become a Mad Hatter, and that's how the character the Mad Hatter came about. But it just goes to show you the chemicals that are needed, and obviously it's not done that way anymore, but we're still using harsh chemicals that can have very bad effects on us and our environment.
Well, I know they've just found out that women who work in the hairstyling industry are way higher risk, at way higher risk than others because of the chemicals that we use on our hair when we get our treatments, our straightening and our curling and our colors and our dyes and all of that. Apparently, they're cancer-causing. And so, you know, we got to really watch what we're doing. There's a lot of things we're doing that are pretty dangerous. But one of the things, and this is kind of light, and Adrian, if you want to say goodbye, I don't mind, because this is a pretty light topic to end the show. So it's been great talking to you, and I want to tell people, look on Animal Party on the website, and you'll see contact numbers. If you're still skeptical and you don't believe that dogs and cats are being sold in China for fur, then look on the website. You'll see the movie. You'll see the fact and the quote and the diplomat who admitted it to the BBC, Chinese diplomat who admitted it. You'll see the fact that there are websites that sell it. Okay, this is real. And if you want to get involved in stopping it, or you just want to find out more, or you want to check it out, then you'll go to Fur Bearer Defenders. And we'll have all that information available on our website so you can link there easily and see the videos and really, really inform yourself. Well, thank you very much, Adrian. Thank you for coming. It's been a great party. Thank you. And thank you for defending our furry friends.
Well, thanks for having me.
That's been great. Thank you. Okay, everybody, before we end the show today, I had a listener email, and I love it when I get a listener email, and I want you to know that I'll always answer them on air if they're good. If they're not good, I'll just, you know, I mean, if they're not the kind of thing that everyone wants to listen to, I'll just send you an email myself. But if it's the kind of thing that works on air, I'll put it on the show, and this is, certainly is one of those, because I shared it a little bit, and I got a lot of feedback, and so this is what's going on. Could you please cover the story on pet owners that talk on cells, tweet, and read their iPads while walking pets? I witness pet owners walk in traffic, rush pets to urinate, and drag pets while engaging in this activity. Okay, so I put it up on Facebook and Twitter, and I asked a bunch of people, and this is a few of the answers I got back. I got back a lot of answers, so keep them coming. I just put up, wonder what you all think about this. Is it dangerous and widespread? Are we ripping off the dogs of the little time they have outside with their owners? Are you using your cell phone to the detriment of your dog during dog walks? Okay, and so it was a little longer than that, but this is the answers I got. I agree with your listener. It's especially troubling to see people talk on cell phones while walking dogs on flexies. The people are oblivious, and the dogs are all over the street. Now, I agree with that. I don't like flexies much. I'm okay with them if you've got one really old lame dog and one really sprightly dog and your whole family's busy and you need the old lame dog to just dawdle behind. Or if you're in a wheelchair in specific circumstances. But I'm not okay with them for regular leash walks in traffic and crowded places. They're definitely not a good plan. They teach the dog he wants to get away from you, and they teach the dog to pull if he wants more independence. They also get tangled and give people nasty burns. So forget about it. Get rid of the flexi if you can. Okay. So then we have Sue says, I feel sorry. Oh, no, this is Gail. That was Sue about the flexies. Thank you, Sue. Okay, so Gail says, I feel sorry for the people, usually women, I see walking with their little children, and the mother is on the phone, and the little dog, too. She's chatting away and oblivious to the child and the dog. This is a long one, so I'll skip to the end of it. I also hate to see someone walking along smoking and either walking a dog or pushing a baby stroller. The ashes fall hither and yon, often on the dog or baby, especially if the kid is in a stroller. The pusher is oblivious to that, too. Never mind secondhand smoke. All right. And then we had... We live across from Central Park, New York City, and every day I see people out with dogs talking on their cell phones. This is at 7 in the morning. Who wants to get a cell phone call at 7 in the morning? Okay. And then she goes on to say, there are also many people who actively engage with their dogs during these morning hours. They toss a ball or a frisbee or just let their dogs play with others. Goes on, and then at the end it says, cell phones are good tools, but if they take time away from being connected with your dog, they are not so good. Okay, I did not get anybody defending them. And I guess I should say, I should give a little defense. If I have a ton of calls to return and I have to work and I got my two little kids home from school on a PA day, I'm guilty of going to the playground, the nearest playground with swing sets and slides and all that kind of stuff, and saying, you guys play, I'm returning my calls. And then I sit on a bench very close to them. At any moment, I can close my phone shut if one of them trips or falls or needs me. I do my phone calls as quickly as I can. I put the phone away, and then I play with my kids. Now, I don't know if that's a problem. Somebody like this lady looking, she might watch me and think, oh, how terrible, she's not playing with her kids. Well, my kids are independent enough to enjoy a playground together or with the other children that are there. I'm there in case of an emergency. I'm also there as soon as my calls are done. Isn't it better for me to be making my calls in a playground in a park where they can play outside than at home with them plugged into TV or, you know, underfoot, and the calls do have to get done. Not all of us can just stop working. What about all those dogs who want to come to camp? I got to take the bookings too. Now, I try my best not to interfere the business with the children or the dogs, but there's been many occasions where I've done the same thing, where I've returned my calls quickly. I'm waiting for a booking. I'm waiting for a last-minute change of address or phone call. I stop. Rather than make the dogs wait in a full car, I'll stop and walk them. And then get that call about the person who says, okay, come now, I'm here now, you can come get my dog. Isn't that a good choice? Rather than make those dogs not get the walk at all? Ah, well, maybe I'm going to get hit with a lot of problems. I don't know. You can find me on Twitter at AnimalDeb, or you can find me on Facebook, Deborah Wolf Pet Expert, and you can always send me emails here at Pet Life Radio. Until next week, be good to your animals and play with those dogs when you walk them. Don't just talk on your cell phone. Don't just text message. Make sure you give your dog plenty of time, too, and your kids. All right, be good to everybody and your animals and yourself, too. Until next week from Animal Party.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.